My name's Demetrius. I'm an alcoholic.
Demetrius.
Man, you guys are going to get it tonight, I'm telling you. Man, it feels good to kind of relax, you know, finally make it to my seat. You know, I don't mind driving, but coming from Long Beach, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, I was thinking on my way, I said, I thought Mark actually liked me. I thought we were friends, you know. But man, it was actually fun. So I really want to thank Mark for inviting me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. Just tell you a little bit about who stands before you. And Vanessa, my greeter, and you know, my co-greeter, because Mark actually infringed on her commitment, like assisting her greeting me throughout. You know, my speaker host, thank you for ushering me through. And everybody that stopped to greet me and shake my hand, you know. Just immediately walking through the doors, you know, I began to just sigh, like, you know, I felt like, man, all right, here we go, like, everything is cool. So you guys have a thriving group, man, and you're really, really lucky, and I hope I can convey a message that will get you to understand just how fortunate we are to be here. And you guys all noticed, you know, I didn't come alone. You know, you're like, man, what does that guy really do? Like, why is she with him? You know, like, really, like, look at her, look at him, you know. I have a nice car and I drive fast and girls like that. No, but, you know, I want to thank my girl for coming with me tonight. She's so sweet. She was like, baby, I'll go with you. You know, I sponsor 8 guys. I put it out in the chat with us month ago, reiterated 2 weeks ago, and they're like, I'm not going to Palmdale. I can't blame them. But here's the facts. I've been sober since February the 7th, 1989. For you guys to do the math, that's 35 years. I'm a proud member of the Bellflower Big Book group. I hope you guys are familiar with our group. I'm so grateful for you guys out here and coming down and supporting our group. You guys don't complain about driving out there when we put the pinch on you, and you come out to our groups from time to time, and we try to reciprocate as best that we can. And the thing about my home group is, you know, we value the traditions. We're enthusiastic about AA. 75-80% of the people, the members of my home group, are sponsored within that group. So you see a bunch of people all doing the same thing. And that's one of the things that have kept me in good stead. And the last fact that you get to know about me is that I'm actively sponsored. I have a beautiful sponsor. He's getting long in the tooth. His name is Johnny H. He's been out here supporting your group for eons. And, you know, that man is busier than I am on any given day. And he loves this program to his very core. He's intertwined with the new people's lives. He has a memory that just will leave you like a ghost. Like, how does he even remember that? And I love my sponsor. I'm current with my sponsor. And, you know, those three things have managed to give me a foundation to keep me planted within AA for 35 years consistently, where I moved through a wealth of problems. You know, my life has not been without problems, but I was taught to share with you folks in a general way what it was like, what happened, and who stands before you today. And if you be alcoholic, if you're really afflicted with this illness of alcoholism like me, I have no problems telling you the truth, telling you, like, who's that guy? You know, I could look good, I could be sharp, I could put the words together, but do not get it twisted. My life is not without problems. I have my hardships, I have my pains. And the thing that I can tell you, you know, this program has given me the ability, has taught me to move through my life with a kind of even cadence and walk through life as if I have no problems, because at the end of the day, I'm truly, truly blessed. And before I go any deeper, man, I got to shout out everybody that's in the back. Because when I came to this program and when I get to that part of my talk, y'all will be like, yeah, that's me. Because I'm one of you, man. I thank you guys for shaking my hands and for being here. And I do want to say again that you're lucky to be in a group like this. You really, really are. You know, you're lucky to have found a group, and I hope you make it your home group, and I hope you get connected and get commitments. So who stands before you? Me on the natural. I'm restless, I'm somewhat irritable, and I'm discontented. I'm absolutely never satisfied. I always want more. I shave mine off the top every single time, and I'm always looking for an angle. That's me on the natural. That's your speaker. I was born that way. I just grew up that way. You know, Mark says, hey, well, be careful if you're going to drive through Angeles Crest. I'm like, I said yes to drive through Angeles Crest, you know? It's like, you know, I want to drive fast. You know, I ride motorcycles. I experience every part of my life all the time. I'm, you know, on the natural, I'm just restless. You know, I'm a little irritable. I'm a little discontented. And growing up, here's me. You know, my mother was one of, she was second born, and she had 10 brothers and sisters. There was 11 of them. She was second born. My father ran with my mother's brothers. And my mom, if you could imagine, she was this young lady that had a lot of responsibility with 9 little brothers and sisters growing up. My father met my mother when they were like 17, 18 years old. They started hanging out together. They had my sister when they were 19, and they had me at age 20. And my father was just like every man that I ever knew growing up. He was hip, slick, and cool. He was a hustler. All my uncles were hustlers. They were hip, slick, and cool. They weren't gangsters. They was about getting money illegally, any way that they could. And that's the image of a man that I had growing up. And by the time I was 2 years old, you know, my mom and dad had had my sister, who was 11 months older than me. She was born January 10th, 66. And I was born January 4th, 67. And by the time I'm 2 years old, my pops is off to do another prison term. And my mom knew she didn't want to be that lady sitting around, somebody's old lady, you know, taking a jail call, sending them packages, being that gal. And she set out to go to school. And when my pops came home, he wasn't coming home to that house. And my mom set out to raise my sister and I. And growing up, here's the type of kid that I was. I'm the kid that's always demanding your attention. I need your approval. If I do something right, just like color within the lines, I expect a parade, you know. I always want to be like, mama, mama, watch this. Check this out. You know, I could do a backflip. I'm jumping on the bed. I'm flipping off the edge of the bed. You know, I climb up to the second story of the apartment building, and I dive into the little pool in the apartment building. I'm always running with the older kids. And my mom went to school at night. She worked 2 jobs. And my sister is nothing like me. She's a goody-goody. She does everything right. She's always been that way. And I'm the type of brother where I get fully done up in my little cowboy get-up, and I'm always an outlaw. I'm never a good guy. My hat's always black. And I got double holstered guns. They were chrome with the pearl, fake pearl handles, handles on them. I got the fake cowboy boots. I got the leather vest with the shingles. I was half Indian, half cowboy, but I had the vest with the shingles that hang down. Got my cowboy hat on. I'm fully ready. My sister's in her room minding her own business. She's not worried about me. She's doing her own thing. And here's me long before I took a drink. And I kick open my sister's door, and I let off my cap guns. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, it's a stick up. And she's like, me, leave me alone. Get out of my room. And she's got Ken in his little Corvette rolling up to the Barbie townhouse to pick up Barbie because they're going on a date. Her room is, her bed is perfectly manicured. She's got her stuffed animals around her little tea set. She's having a little tea party. And I knock everything over. I'm jumping up and down on her bed going, clah, clah. And she's screaming at my mom, and my mom's like, leave your sister alone. Just go to your room. Just be quiet. And I go to my room. I take out my little Evel Knievel wind-up little toy. I build myself a ramp. I take the screen off my window and I wind his butt up, wind him up, and I shoot him out the window, run around the apartment building, pick him up. I do that two or three times. I care nothing for what you give me. I'm never grateful for anything that you give me. After the third time, I'm bored doing that. I just leave Evel Knievel in the alley. And now I'm underneath my bed with a book of matches like Indiana Jones on a walkabout. And I'm striking the matches like I'm in a cave, and I'm lighting the fridge on the bottom of my hand-me-down box spring, and it's going up like fireworks, and I'm like, ooh, and I'm just in the zone. And I do that till I run out of matches, and now I'm in my mother's room. It's a Sunday. She's folding towels. She just wants to get through laundry, and I'm jumping on her bed asking her to pay attention to me. And she looks up, smoke's coming through my room, and that's your speaker on the natural. And this program has been a process of self-discovery for me. It's an opportunity for me to know who I've been rolling with when I'm dead solo, I'm half in the bag, and I'm riding down the 101. You know, this program has given me an opportunity to look deep within myself and come to know who I really am to the core. And the best part about it, I've been able to develop relationships with men, not only know it for myself, but disclose it to others and say, these are the things that plague me. These are the things that I'm afraid of. And this is long before I took a first drink. And my mom met this guy. He was nothing like any man that I'd ever seen before. I called him an L7. If you hold up an L, you match it with a 7, he was a square. Every man I ever saw growing up, they straightened their hair, they put curlers in their hair, they grew their fingernails long, they moved their hands when they talked, they chewed gum, they wore silk everything, they drove Cadillacs, carried guns and gold chains. And this man wore dressed kind of like I'm dressed tonight. He was a principal of an elementary school in Linwood. My mom had worked there. She had moved up from department stores and was going to college, and she got an administration job in this school. And he started dating my mom. And they moved me in this town called Cerritos. It's a very nice, beautiful community. And they got married. I had two instant stepbrothers, a stepsister. I had a nanny and my sister, and we moved into this four-bedroom home. And I didn't fit into this family. My sister fit just perfect. And this man had always taken interest in me as my father's brother, my Uncle Greg, my Uncle G. And he started taking me camping from the time I was 3 years old. And it's just about this time, right around Thanksgiving break, he would take me every single year from the time I was 3 years old to some of the most majestic, beautiful places you could ever imagine. And he'd take me camping for a whole week, and he taught me things as a young boy, and he was that solid man in my life. And this time in particular, I'm 12 years old, and I ask him if I could bring my buddy Andrew. And every time I get to this point in my talk, I always pause a little bit and think about Drew, because he hasn't made it to us yet. And Andrew's just like me. And we go up to Yosemite. It's the winter time. The first day we get up there, we're standing in these little adjoining cabins because he had just married my Aunt Ida, whom they're still married to this very day. And we go cross-country skiing the very first day. My uncle's a photographer. He takes the most beautiful pictures. We have the greatest time. And we go back to this little room, and we go to bed early because the next day we're going snowshoe hiking. And my uncle had planned this trip. And on the way up there, my uncle, so thoughtful, so considerate, he had given me my Christmas present in November. And it was a Swiss Army knife. And my buddy Drew's like, meet man, let's get into something. I'm like, Drew, chill out, man. Like, we're going snowshoe hiking tomorrow. Go to bed. And here's a kid that's 12 years old with my aunt and my uncle in the very next room not thinking about drinking. And Andrew leaves the room, and he comes back with a jug of Tyrolean wine. And here's how I drink, and it never changed from the first time that I drank. The minute he came through the door with the wine, I grabbed it. Because if we're going to party, I'm always going to be in control of the issue. If I can put the move on you, I'm shelling it out. I'm pouring the drinks. I'm passing the blunt. I'm giving you your blast. I got this, you know. And I put it between my legs, and I'm laid up in my PJs not thinking about drinking. But when it was presented before me, I was powerless. And I remember it was ice cold, a green bottle, had a long neck, a hook in the top, and a black cap. And I asked him where he got it. He's like, I was out walking. I seen it in the snow. I grabbed it. And I sent him to the bathroom. He comes back with two little Dixie cups. And before I even take a drink, I always romance the drink. You know, just knowing that it's about to go down, it just makes me just feel better. And I'm looking at him like, where'd you get it, Drew? He tells me again. And I can remember cracking the seal. And I pour himself some and I pour myself some. And if you're going to party with me, I always force the drink upon my fellows. You know, because that's what we're here to do. We're not here to have a drink. We're here to get tore up. And I wasn't even thinking about drinking. And he takes a drink and I take a drink. I pour him another and I go, drink, Drew. He takes a drink and I take a drink. And we didn't even drink the neck. And the next thing that happens to me when I start to get a little buzz, I start wanting to move around. I want to do things. I take this little Swiss Army knife out, and I always wanted to be hip, slick, and cool. But I was, you know, I wasn't cool. I wasn't nobody. I always wanted a dope nickname like D-Money or D-Lo, you know. And I take out this little Swiss Army knife. I started carving my name in the bedpost. Now, my name has 10 letters. You know, and by the time I got to the T, I was burnt out, you know, and I put and I get fully dressed. We go back out. He shows me where he got it. We took a 6-pack, a tall can of Budweiser's. We drank one beer apiece. I went back out in Yosemite, a kid that was on vacation that I've been doing since I was 3 years old with my aunt and my uncle that I absolutely adored. And I took this little Swiss Army knife. I started slashing people's tires, slicing people's tents, and vandalizing people's property. From the very first time that I really drank on my own, I got drunk. From that very first time that I got drunk, I got arrested. From that very first time that I got arrested and they brought me and Andrew out, cuffed together, and they set us down and had court the next day. And I look out, and my aunt and my uncle are the only ones sitting there, and there was a judge, and there was a bailiff. And the judge is sitting there reading all the damages that I had done. And he's tallying up the thing. It's that first time that I got that look from my loved ones. The people that gave me a strong name because they knew I was going to be something. The people that gave me every resource and everything that I ever want. That look of disappointment. And from the age of 12... when I disappointed you, I looked you right back in your eye like, what? This is my life. And from that age on, that's the attitude that I adopted. And I knew when I got home, wasn't nothing going to happen to me. I'm 12 years old. What my mom going to do? Whoop me? I'm like, what's this stepdad going to do? If he ever even raised his voice at me, if he ever even told me something that I didn't like, the type of stepson that I was, I would threaten him with my father. And I say, yeah, say something to me. I'll call my pops. And he knew my pops would come burning down the block in his Cadillac and tear the whole block up. And that's what kind of respect that I had, none for my stepfather. And by this time, this man had progressed in his career. He was the principal of this high school that I was soon to be going to, Cerritos High School. My mother had gotten a job at the school district. She had went to college and got her bachelor's and had gotten her master's. And she was director of fiscal services for the district in the city in which we lived. And my parents were pillars in the community. All my brothers and sisters had went to this very same college. All of them, I mean high school, had graduated from high school and went directly into university. And here comes the baby. And by the time I go through their freshman years, cool. Because I took every single course that my sister had taken 2 years prior. Because she had gotten skipped up a grade and she graduated when she was like 16 and a half. And she went directly to UCLA and she kept copious notes and everything in binders. So I'm like, man, by the time I was a junior, they're like, you're going to take calculus. I'm like, hell, I only need 2 years of math. Like, I'm not taking calculus. And they're like, well, just my mom's like, you should take it. You did so great in algebra too. And I'm like, I've been using my sister's work all through high school, you know? And by the time I'm a senior in high school, I'm partying every now and again, and I get kicked off of everything, you know? I'm that guy that's a stellar athlete. I can do everything well, but the coaches would talk to my parents. They say, he's just incorrigible. You know, he kind of beats to his own tune. He's just not a team player. He doesn't follow the rules. You know, it just seems like, you know, he doesn't want to be here. And the last straw, I got kicked off the basketball team, and I started hanging out with these guys called the PWBs, the Piss Wall Boys. And here's what happened to me. By the time I graduated from high school, I was fully baked. You know, I was doing whatever I wanted to do. I was drinking all the time. I was doing anything else all the time that I wanted. And when I showed up to my graduations, my parents had bought me a lovely suit like this. And I showed up in some Gotcha shorts, a hang ten tank top, my gown ripped up the back. I had lost my cap. And when I walk across the stage, I stop and yell at the mic, "Yeah! I had been at Boca Chica Beach drinking Bacardi 151, and I look at my stepfather, who's the principal of my high school, and he gives me that look. And I look at him in his face like, what is my life? And when I go down on the field, my father is there, my blood-born father. All my brothers and sisters are home from college. All my aunts and uncles are there. I've got 30 people on the field to see me graduate. And my mother says to me, son, invite all your friends over. We've got cake. We've got food. We're going to have a party for you. Everybody could come over." And I look at my mother and I say, "How could you do that? Like, it's my graduation night. Like, Steve S. is having a two-kegger. Mom, like, how could you be so selfish to have a party tonight?" And that's the kid that I was, and I wasn't raised to be that kid. But under the lash of alcohol, I had no care. This started to become my normal life, and it wasn't how I was raised. And this is 1985. And if you can imagine, or if you were there, it was on and cracking in the 80s. And I was doing every little bit of sizzling. And next thing you know, I'm the guy that's running up and down the tracks in Compton, barefoot in the middle of the night, chasing that little substance. And one day I looked in the mirror, and what I saw was a monster. And I'm not even 19 years old, and I'm still living with my parents. And I remember I finally copped, and they're like, "We've known this for a while. We've been waiting for you to find out." And I'm so spoiled and want everything. It took me 3 days to find the right facility that I would go to. Because I call these places and I'd be like, "What are your amenities?" I called this place called Sierra Tucson in Tucson, Arizona. And they said, "Well, we have horseback riding." I'm like, "Guided or solo?" They're like, "Guided, of course." And they were like, "We have basketball." I'm like, "Full court or half?" They're like, "Full court basketball." And they were like, "We have shuffleboard." I'm like, "I don't like shuffleboard." And they're like, "You have a gourmet chef, a private bungalow." And they tell me all these things. I'm like, "I'm there." And my parents set out to drive me there. And this is my first introduction to AA. And they drive me there. They get me a little motel room right next to theirs. And I'm sitting there waiting to go to intake in the morning. And I know my life is about to change. And I'm staring out the window across the street at this little truck stop. And I go out of this room. I'm 19 years old. I knock on my mother's door and I ask her for $6. I'm like, "Mom, give me $6. I'm going to go across the street. I'm going to grab a pack of smokes. I'm going to grab a beer. I'm coming back to this room, and I'm going to go in the morning." And my mother closed that door and opened it up and handed her son $6. And I'm grateful that she did. And I went to that place, and I was introduced to you people. You see, but I'm 19 years old. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I wanted to be a D-boy. You see, my oldest brother, Rice University football scholarship. My second brother, University of Texas, ran track and field. My stepsister, Cal State Fullerton. My blood-born sister, UCLA. Me, I'm a loser, man. My admiration, I want to be a D-boy. I want to be the dope man. That's all that, I mean, that's just the best I could think for myself. And, of course, I didn't stay sober. I stayed out there for a while, and by the time I came home, my parents had did family week. They weren't bringing me in the house, and I started hanging around with different places, and I found myself out in Pacoima, hanging out with the BGF. And I'm ripping and running these streets, doing things and jumping out of back windows before the batteram come through the front of the house. And I want to tell you guys, in the end, here's your speaker. I'm homeless in the city of Santa Ana. I'm walking around. I cannot walk past a car without jiggling the doorknob, because if it's unlocked, I'm rifling through your stuff. I don't walk by a payphone. Some of you guys don't even know what a payphone is. put the two fingers in the coin return to see if maybe it's a nickel, maybe it's a dime, maybe if I'm lucky it's a quarter. You know, I know every single spot to stop and get a sack lunch or get a meal where all the good people from the churches come and feed the homeless people. I'm the guy that will scrounge up enough money for a 40. I go to the same ATM three nights in a row. I hide in the bushes drinking my 40. And when it gets down to about this much, whoever walks up next, you're getting it over the head after that third beep, beep, because I know the cash is on the way. And that became a normal life to me. And in the very, very end, I'm the guy that's got two pair of pants on, because that's all I own. They're both tied up with shoelaces. I've got two shirts on, a sweatshirt and a jacket. It's raining, and I'm the guy that runs out at AM, PM when you're pumping your gas, asking you if I can hit your windows for some change. Meanwhile, my parents live in a five-bedroom home in Lake Forest on a bridle path, just the two of them. And this life became normal to me. That's where alcohol had taken me. And I was willing to continue that life. And I got rescued by the Orange County Police Department. And I'm lucky that I did. And they set me down for what it was written as a robbery. But that sounds really like, man, he was out there jacking people. No, I was a punk purse snatcher. And I know that's a punk move. And that's what I had got arrested for, snatching an old lady's purse. And I got out of there, and I went to jail for a year. And when I came home, of course, I smoked some non-habit-forming weed. And my parents let me live with them in Lake Forest, and they're driving me around to all these meetings. And I want to tell you guys how I found you people and what it has done for me. And I'm 22 years old. I'm 22 years old, absolutely lost. You know, I can't have a conversation with my stepfather that because he asks you those tough questions like, how are you doing and what's your plan? You know, what's your short-term goals? You know, do you need some help getting back? I'm like, Pops, like, I'm going to the dance tonight. Like, chill, you know? I can't even have a conversation with him because I couldn't meet him on his level. And I'm going to this other program, which Alcoholics Anonymous is completely separate from anything. And this program is so altruistic and so beautiful that we lend our steps and our traditions, this whole program, to any other program that they want. They could take it verbatim. We don't even care. But I want to tell you, although I was a member of another 12-step program that utilized our steps and traditions, you know, it's completely separate from AA. And I don't mention it by name because I don't want you to get it twisted, because AA stands alone. We're not affiliated with any other organization. And I stayed physically sober for 3.5 years, but nothing changed in my life. I fought once a week. Nobody has 52 fights a year but me, once a week. I fought in AA meetings, at conventions. I played a whole lot of basketball. You can't go play pickup basketball without getting in a fight. I can't, because when I call a foul, I expect the ball. And when you don't give it to me, now you disrespecting me. And when you disrespect me, if I let it go down, I look like a punk. And if I look like a punk, then I look scared. And if I look scared, then you're going to think I'm weak. And if you think I'm weak, now you're going to take off on me. And before you can take off on me, I take off on you. And I'm sober. I'm physically sober. Nothing changed in my life. I'm still a hustler. Ain't had a job. I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a girlfriend. Because if you really knew me, you wouldn't want to be with me. I am not going to school. You know, I'm still committing crimes, and I'm physically sober. And as a result, you know how I had to go to sleep at night? I was the guy that would take a shower, get all ready for bed, and I lay there. I'm wide awake. I get out, let me do some push-ups. I knock out 100, you know, let me hit some sit-ups. And I had to work to go to sleep. And I'm so grateful I found my home group, because I was physically sober, suffering, dying, just an arm's length from picking up. And I came to my home group behind my best friend, Mark. And every day in the group, when I would go to Monday night, and I hated it, man. I came to the group, I come in a Fila sweatsuit, matching Fila sneakers. I got a Fila hat on, I got a Jerry Curl, I got a fake gold chain on, I got a beeper that ain't got no service because I can't pay the $9.99 every single month. But I don't, it could be 30 seats open, but I stand in the very back. I put my leg on the wall, I cross my arms, I got my hat just sitting on top of my Jerry Curl, my fake gold chains on, my beeper, and the minute the speaker says something good, I turn my beeper on and off, so it goes doo-doo, 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 and I hold it up like this. Ain't nobody paging me, I ain't even got service. I'm fake as a $3 bill. And my buddy Mark is like, man, have you talked to Bob yet? And Bob Decker stood at the front of my home group every single week. And if you knew this, you were blessed to know this man. He was 6'2". His hair was perfect. He got manicures and pedicures every 2 weeks. His pants were creased. His shirt was tucked in. He was clean. His teeth was perfect. His wife was absolutely gorgeous. She had the dopest handbags. His car was clean every time you seen him. And this man was quiet, he was peaceful, he had a beautiful smile, and he wasn't no chump. And one day I hollered at him, like, Bob, can I talk to you? He's like, yeah. And I've got like almost 4 years. And Bob gets in my car, I had a 63 Buick Wildcat, had no reverse. And Bob and I are going to Moffitt's. And I remember I pull it forward and I throw it in neutral and I put my leg out and I back it up like this. And I got the music. I got more in the stereo than a car's worth. And I got the music. Whoosh. And Bob's looking at me. He's like, how long you got sober? I'm like, yeah, Bob, I'm coming up on 4 years, man. And he's like, okay. And Bob started sponsoring me. And you know what my sponsor did for me? He shared his life with me. You see, Bob was a rider. He was a jacker. He was a womanizer. He was a robber. And I saw how he was living as a result of AA. And when I came to you people, I thought sobriety was the answer. Like, man, I'm clean. I'm sober, man. I'm doing it. Like, I ain't high. You know, and I thought I was winning. But when I came to you folks, I was hopeless. You see, when I look at my brothers and sister, my parents' life, like, where do I even start? Like, how do I get there? There's nothing for me to accomplish in life. And I came to you people hopeless. And as a result of this man sharing his life with me, I was given some hope. And he guided me through these steps. And these steps are the process of the discovery. It's the means in which you get to know whom you are. And you get to disclose to someone that you trust and that you believe, that you admire. And I'm so grateful that he did that. And when I did my inventory with that man, he told me the truth. And when it was all said and done, the biggest fact that I learned about myself is that I'm afraid. I'm scared. But if you knew me, you would say, oh, D, he's down. He's low. He's with whatever. You know, but I was scared of everything. I was scared of work. I was scared of relationships. I was scared of everything. And I'm so, so grateful that that man directed me to develop a relationship with a God. And he directed me to pages 86, 87 in our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And another non-AA proof literature that I absolutely love. And I'll mention it. This is the 24-hour day book because it absolutely changed my life. And he suggested that I take those directions on my knees every morning and every evening. And I started to do that based upon his suggestion. And I thought I had God, because you can't be young, black, raised by women and not know God. You see, but I tried to emulate what I saw growing up. And it looked like this, you know, like all the women in my family, they pray like this. It's like this. It goes like this. Oh, we got to close your eyes. Oh, Father, Lord, Jesus, Messiah, Rapha. You know, it's like five names for the same person, and they start speaking in tongues, and I just tried to, like, do that, you know, but it wasn't personal. And I developed this relationship with God, and my life started to take shape. And I'm so, so grateful for this sponsorship. And for me, when I look at sponsorship, I look at it as building an intimate relationship with the guys that I sponsor. I ain't here to run nobody's life because I can't run my own. And my life took off like you can't imagine. I opened a company and I made more money than I could spend. I'm living high on the hog. I got cars with TVs in them, with TVs wasn't even in cars. And I got married. You look at me, I'm custom tailored suits and my wife, you know, I got the most precious little boy and everything's perfect. You know, and you look at it, and I was in the banking industry in the middle of the meltdown, as you can imagine, and when it melted, and, you know, my life started kind of blowing up, and Bob, I hate to tell you, it's hard for me to say, but, you know, Bob left us, meaning he left the program, but I will tell you this, when it was time to come back, it was my phone that rang, and I was able to 12-step my former sponsor, and I found myself coming home from work, you know, arguing with somebody in the car. And I know how to get down. You know, I just pull in front of you and I just slowly stop. And I get out the car and I'm like, you know, if he don't really want to get down, you know, there's a couple of P words that you can call him to really test him. And he got out and I'm fighting in the middle of the street a block from my house. And it was a Thursday night. And I'm bloody and knuckles is tore up. It was the Thursday night under the bridge meeting. I go to that meeting, and that's when I ran into my current sponsor, Johnny. And he said, you know what the difference between me and you, kid, is? I said, what, Johnny? Because Johnny's from a whole different clan than what Bob is from. It was completely different. And I'm like, what, Johnny? He's like, I'm still willing to take direction, and you're not. And when he said it, I was like, you're right. Would never ask a man like Johnny to sponsor me in fear that I'd be driving to Palmdale on a Friday night. For sure. And I want to tell you guys, you know, although that my marriage didn't survive, if you looked at my life, you thought, man, this is everything. Like, I have the most amazing relationship with this kid. And my son's life was absolutely written. You know, he had a fairy tale life. He was the perfect kid, and my son was academically excelled, and he was in advanced classes, and he was a stellar athlete. And he got his first scholarship after his freshman year of football, and he had multiple scholarships to go to plenty of colleges. By the time he was a senior, he played for Poly High School, and he had a camera crew in our home his whole senior year just filming his life. And I'm like, you know, I'm doing great and everything's fine. And, you know, and now in order for me to talk to my son, I get jail calls. And my baby boy has turned 18 and he made bad decisions and his decisions haven't stopped. And he's 24 years old now, and since he's been 18, I'd say he's been locked up for 5 years. 5 years. And he doesn't know when he's coming home, you know. The sentence he just got was 12 years. And since he's been in jail, he's got two more cases that he's trying to figure out. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. And the last time that I got a call that he was being picked up, I was in my office, and my sales room is about big as this, a bunch of guys throughout it. And I remember when I got the call, I just want to make it off the sales floor. And, you know, it was like a gut punch. And I crawled to the conference room, and a buddy talked to me, and I was saying to myself, this is it, man. Like, you know how many guys I've helped? You know how much service I've done? You know how many men that are not even my blood that I've given my life to? Why my boy, God? Why my son? And I'm walking out of my office and I say, F it, man, I'm done with this. And about 200 yards is a liquor store, and I know I'm going to get me a bottle of 151. I'm turning it up, and it's over. And before I walked out of the parking lot, something said, call your sponsor. And I called Johnny, and he told me to come meet him. And I went and met my sponsor. And my sponsor sat with me, and I shared with him where I was. And by the time we were done talking for 15 minutes, I forgot why I had left work. And what I am telling you guys is this. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life beyond my absolute wildest dream. I know what takes the big hurt away. I know what will give me instant relief. And I know it would work today. But the thing that I will tell you is this. This program of Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to give us the absolute same relief that we all always sought for in a drink. And I promise you that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous will do that for you. It just doesn't do it instantaneously. And the thing that I want you to know is this. For me, there is absolutely no way that I could change, stand before you an absolute changed man if it wasn't for the people that have come before me and have paved the way. I'm absolutely indebted to this program. I love this program. I'm constantly of service to this program. And I really, really hope that you guys give yourselves a break. You'll make it to a place to where you can live in steps 10, 11, and 12. So thank you for allowing me to share.